In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Kiss excellence.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sports Hour. This is Mitch Mo.
And this is Dallin. Guys, welcome back in. Good to be here. Mitch, you're looking great on this Saturday afternoon that we are recording this little podcast here. How's your weekend going so far?
So far, so good. I've had the last 2 days off. Got a four-day weekend.
Oh,
this weekend,
right, with the Memorial Day. Look at that.
All right. So for some reason, though, I'm still waking up at 4:30 a.m., like getting ready to go to work. And so it's a little frustrating when you're like, oh, this is my chance. This is my chance to catch up on some sleep. And, we'll iron the kinks out. We got 2 days left to get it right. So
right. What is, on the weekend, what is sleeping into you? Because you're waking up pretty early for work. So what is your definition of, like, if you slept till this time, then you're sleeping in?
Probably about 7:30. I'm not going to lie.
7:30? Oh, my.
Like, if I'm not up and moving, I feel like I'm wasting time if I'm not up and going. So, yeah, I got to get up and moving.
I'm mad if I have to wake up at, like, 7:30. I'm not going to lie. Like, that's like my weekday, like, you know, 7:30, somewhere around there. But, man. I'm not an early person. Like, if I can sleep into like 10 on a weekend, I'm like chilling.
Well, that's like usually that's our tea times. Like when we book tea times, man. Like we want to get out
early golfer, right?
Oh, we got to get out nice and early, yeah. Because we can get back home by noon ish.
Right.
Play 18, get back home by noon, and I mean you still got the whole rest half of the day to go. So.
You're too efficient with your time, my friend. I'm just like, let me sleep. I'm trying to hang out all day and not do anything.
It's my version of load management, time management.
Yeah. you're LeBron out here at the end of the regular season, like load managing, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, great stuff. Well, guys, today, speaking of the LeBron Jameses of the world, we're going to be talking NBA playoffs because the first round has been going on for about a week, started last Sunday, so we are, you know, in the thick of it. In fact, as of like 10 minutes ago, we have our first complete series. We have one series that's already done, so we're going to get into all of that today on the podcast. That's going to be the main focus here. But before we do, Mitch, we got a voicemail. We got a voice message from our good friend of the show, the Italian Stallion, a.k.a. Tanner Presenti, who sent in a question to us on Anchor, and we appreciate him for doing that. So we're going to take that here and see what Tanner had to say.
Hey, yo, Mitch Mo, Dallin, what's up, boys? This is Tanner P, the Italian Stallion. Just wanted to call in, talk about the situation going on in Denver with Juwan James. He sat out last year to COVID, understandably, and he's working out this off season to get ready for this upcoming season, and he tore his Achilles. Well, let's clarify, he was working out outside of the team facility, and now he tore his Achilles. And so going forward, the Broncos don't want to pay his salary from last year or this year. So he's pretty much losing out on $20 million. So I just kind of want to get your take on what you think is right, what you think the Broncos, the NFL should do. Obviously, the NFLPA is against it. So I'm just kind of curious what you guys think and, you know, just what the NFL and the Broncos should do moving forward. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay. Well, thanks for the question, Tanner. We appreciate it. And as you've heard us say on here before, if you have something to say or thoughts on something we talked about or didn't talk about here on the podcast, go to Anchor and leave us that voice message. But Tanner, I was referring, you know, talking about the Juwan James situation in Denver. He's been officially cut now. So there was this question about whether or not he'd be released after his season-ending Achilles injury. He was released by the Broncos back on May 14th. In the last 2 years, he's only played three games and will now not play an entire season again. So this is a complicated situation, Mitch, because on the one hand, when you look at the player's perspective, I mean, he's working out. He's trying to get into football shape. He opted out last year with COVID. You know, he's trying to gear back up before the offseason, and he gets injured, not on the team facility, you know, not with the team, you know, does it. He's doing it on his own. And technically, per the rules of the NFL, the Broncos have, you know, every right to cut him and void his contract, which was $10 million they cleared off their cap and $9.85 million in base salary by releasing him. So the team has the right to do this, but then there's the moral question of whether or not they should, right? This guy didn't get injured hang gliding, right? Like, it's football. He's doing football things.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Broncos should have the right to just cut him, void his contract, and say, get out of here, you got injured off of our, you know, grounds, and you know what your deal is? Or should there be a change in that regard?
You know, Dallin, just because you can do something doesn't make it the right thing to do. And this just seemed like a really cheap way for Denver to get out of guarantees of, you know, all this guaranteed money to a guy that, it's not going to play this year because of an Achilles injury. I'd really like to say, you know, smart move, you know, good job. But like, the morality of it is, like, the guy was working out, trying to get back in shape so he can come play for your team that's going to go 5-12. He didn't have to do that. He was doing that on his own time. Like you said, he wasn't, you know, going rock climbing off the side of some mountain, fell down and tore his Achilles. You know, he wasn't doing anything dangerous. He was working out, getting back into shape so he can go do his job. And so I do have a problem with them cutting him. I think it was a weak move on Denver's part. And I wish that didn't happen to Juwan James, but it did. That's the fact. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. I mean, I don't know. It's a weird thing to me for you to cut someone trying to gear back up to go do their job. That just seems weird.
Yeah, like, that doesn't make much sense in and of itself, right? If you look at it just like in a vacuum, that the idea of doing something like that doesn't make sense. Now, obviously, there's more to it. As you mentioned, the team has every right to do this. Arguably, they're doing this to save themselves money and value on a contract that they handed out to this guy just a few years ago. They signed him in 2019 from Miami, 4 years, $51 million. And like I said, in the past two seasons, he's only played three games. Played three games in 2019, suffered a knee injury, and then he sat out all of 2020 due to COVID. And now he's not going to play this year. So there, you know, you're the front office. You're looking like, okay, so, you know, you're doing the math. All right, we put in, you know, this amount of money, $13 million a year that we've paid this guy for the last 3 years, 2 years to get nothing. And if we keep him, we're going to get nothing again. You know, and how good is he post-injury? Is he even close to worth what you'd have to be paying him? So, like, sure, that makes sense on that side from the NFL perspective. And by the way, all other 31 NFL teams would have done the exact same thing. Like, this isn't necessarily an indictment of the Denver Broncos. I don't think there's some franchise out there that's, like, nicer than everybody else and wouldn't save themselves $10 million in a cap-strapped year. But I agree with you that they shouldn't have the ability to do this. If a player is rock climbing and he hurts himself, that's on him, man. You know, your body is your investment. And you hurt your body, you hurt your investment. Like, bottom line, that's the name of the game here. But he was, like you said, you know, getting better at his job, getting ready to do his job. And that seems really wrong to me. Now, he's filed a grievance. He has said that he doesn't have all the support from the NFLPA, the Players Association, that he would like. And this isn't the first time something like this has happened. So it's unlikely he's going to get his full contract or maybe even like, you know, a significant portion of what he was owed. But it is an unfortunate situation and perhaps becomes a bargaining chip in future, collective bargaining negotiations between the league and the players as far as what they want. You know, these sort of situations might be brought up in the future as far as what teams are able to do with players' money when they get injured in this way.
Well, and it seems like that's going to be like, there's going to be a hard, if we gave the teams the ability to say, to decide what's going to be, what activities are okay and what's not okay. If it's like, because this was a non-team activity, but like, let's say he's working out because he wants to pursue powerlifting now, but he's not getting away from the NFL yet. Like, so then where do you draw the line? Is this an injury where he was getting back into football shape or an injury where he was trying to get into powerlifting?
Is he just working out for fun on his own or is it a specific,
like, where do you draw the line? And yeah, so that's where I get question. The rule. That's where I get the rule of, was it a team activity or not? It just still, it seems like a shitty way to cut someone.
Yeah, no, exactly. And to save yourself money, which is ultimately what this is like all about.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, if this guy is only getting paid $2 million next year, do they cut him? Like, I mean, it depends on how you feel about the guy, but the situation's very different, right? When you could look and say, we save ourselves $10 million this year. We get out of the final year of this contract. He hasn't contributed to us in any way because he hasn't played. So, like, there's too much motivation to cut him than there, you know, than to keep him around. So, an unfortunate situation for him. I hope he gets at least some of his money back because ultimately I think he's wronged there in that sense. But obviously, like we said, the Broncos, the NFL, I mean, this is the rules. This is how it is. The NFLPA will have to fight for this in the future as some more specific clarifications or some more specific wording as far as what is allowed and what's not allowed if you're going to explore this any further. But it is an interesting situation. And again, we appreciate Tanner for sending in that question.
Yeah. So. Absolutely.
All right, Mitch, let's jump into the NBA here. NBA playoffs going on, and we've got to start here, buddy. The first series to wrap up, and I'm not going to lie, this is the most surprising thing from the NBA playoffs so far, and that is the Milwaukee Bucks sweeping the defending Eastern champs, Miami Heat, in four games. It was over, and honestly, most of the games weren't close. Game one, overtime, real battle. Milwaukee pulled it out at home. They blew out the Heat the next two games by 30 points. And then today, you know, it was on the heels. Heat had a lead at half, you know, and then the Bucks came around in the second half and was able to pull out the victory, get the sweep, and move on to the second round. This is significant because, Mitch, you put a certain amount of money on the Heat, not just like winning this series, but returning to the NBA Finals.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I did. I'm a whole Benjamin out now. we got a Jordan. I'll have that hundo for you.
Are you Venmo? Is he want that in cash? How is this working?
I don't know. He probably is going to get creative with the way he wants to.
What if he wants $100 in Dogecoin?
Well, I'm not going to invest in Dogecoin. I wouldn't put him through that. I know Dogecoin to the moon, but someday it's going to come back down. He seems like the kind of guy that might want me to get $100 in ones and make it rain on him.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's
he might really rub it in. But yeah, no, what this says to me about this series is, one, I was grossly wrong on the Heat, and two, I think that people are not giving Milwaukee enough respect. I think that, you know, we've seen over the last few years them have these 60 plus win seasons, and you know they're out in the second round, and I think that you know we've seen a turning point here for Milwaukee. I think that when you play, and Miami's a good team, Miami is still a good basketball team, but when you play this well against a good Miami team, and three of the games really aren't that close. I mean, they won by 17 today. That's still not necessarily a close game, and they dominated the second half. I think they got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder being a three seed. So, I mean, I think what this series says to me is Milwaukee has turned a corner here, and they should be a serious threat to take the East.
100%, Mitch. And going into this playoffs, specifically in the Eastern Conference, I always felt like, and I still do feel like, it's really a three-team race. It's going to be one of the Sixers, the Nets, and the Bucks, the top three seeds in the East. I felt like there was a clear next tier after those three teams. And we've seen that. Miami was around the same record competing for a 4-5 spot at the end of the season with the Knicks and the Hawks. They ended up falling to the 6 and got a horrible matchup in Milwaukee. I mean, sure, you'd much rather play the Knicks or the Hawks there. That's a tough draw, don't get me wrong, but the Bucks are really good. And Mitch, Drew Holiday makes a huge difference. I did not anticipate or expect that big a difference and how this team played from the last few years with Eric Bledsoe as the guard, as that sort of facilitator and a defensive guy. He was good, but not great. Drew Holiday has been great. And now you're like, okay, you've got Giannis, you've got Middleton who can get you buckets, and you've got Holiday who can lock it down on defense and facilitate the ball on offense. And all of a sudden it's like, holy cow. Yeah, this Bucks team's really good. Also helps that Bryn Forbes is hitting threes like he's J.J. Redick, you know, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, all the pieces are sort of moving around. This is a team playing its best basketball at the right time, and that's in the playoffs. And so, you know, this team is not the same team, as you mentioned, that won 60 games and lost in the second round, right, these last few seasons. This is a different roster, and I think that Drew Holiday move in the offseason, we talked about it, we praised the move, because they had to do something. Clearly, what they were doing wasn't working. And I think this is already shown to be paying off. And it's going to create a very challenging matchup in the second round when they inevitably face the Brooklyn Nets. So, Bucks are legit. They are legit.
And I want to just quick shout out. Chris Middleton is a man.
Yeah, he is.
That guy played an incredible series.
Yeah.
An incredible series.
Yeah, they're legit.
See, if he carries that momentum, he's got to carry that momentum now. You know, you can't have one good series and then call it quits. But, you know, he looked like a man among boys some of those games. It was incredible.
Right. I do want to say one thing about Miami before we move on. Obviously, a disappointing season after the finals run. The roster's in a strange spot. There's a couple guys who are either, you know, top of their prime or starting to age, and then a bunch of very young, inexperienced players. How they construct this roster moving forward, do they keep everybody around? Do they add more veterans and move on from young pieces? This year, they had opportunities to trade for guys, specifically James Harden, and they refused to include Tyler Hero in those trade discussions. Tyler Hero was fantastic last year in the bubble and in the playoff run. He was not the same guy this year. And you've got to wonder what sort of, you know, did you fall in love with the Tyler Hero you saw in the bubble? Is he truly that guy moving forward that's worth holding on to and not giving up for a James Harden type? Or did they make a mistake by not pursuing that sort of player? So the future will tell, you know, for Miami. This isn't their only opportunity, you know. But I think the roster, the way it's constructed, is very interesting. And they're going to have to make some moves and improvements. And I'm curious to see what direction. Do they lean into the youth? Or do they lean into the veterans and try to create, you know, an older, more experienced squad?
Yeah, time will tell with Tyler Hero. Absolutely. I mean, it's hard to believe that you wouldn't sell when the value is at its absolute highest.
But on a guy who'd only played a year. I mean, he'd only played a year, right? I mean,
but, you know, that's not saying that, you know, he has a down year. He returns back to form and produces something similar to what was in the bubble. And that, now you've got another valuable trade asset again, so.
No doubt. Time will tell, but it is curious when you see how they exited so early in the playoffs this year and you think, okay, well, what if you had James Harden on that team?
Right.
Probably top four seed, probably still in this thing. But, you know, now they get to enjoy the beaches of Miami, and I'm sure they're fine. Mitch, let's move on to the other side of this sort of 3-6 matchup here, and that is the 2-7, as I mentioned earlier, the Brooklyn Nets. They're taking on the Boston Celtics. Boston gets the win at home last night in Game 3, so they avoid the sweep. It's 2-1 in that series. game four tomorrow. Mitch, I think what I'm taking away from this series is that Brooklyn, pretty good. Just, you know, Kyrie, James Harden, Kevin Durant. Turns out that's a very, very good basketball team. And Boston, unfortunately, without Jaylen Brown, we're not able to really see what that team's full potential is, right? Kemba's been okay this year. Jason Tatum's playing out of his mind, 50 points last night in their win. But this team is not at full strength, right? This team isn't the full-strength Boston team, who I expected to be a top three or four seed in the East. I expect, you know, good things. Season didn't turn out as well as it could have. The Jaylen Brown injury doesn't help them here. I think it's probably a gentleman's sweep for Boston. Glad they were able to get one win, you know, at home. You see their young star Jason Tatum ball out. But this is Brooklyn. And I don't think, honestly, we know enough about Brooklyn to know if they're legit against this Boston team. I think we're really going to know how the Nets, you know, what the Nets really are in that second round matchup against Milwaukee. I think that's when we find out if they're legit or not.
Yeah, I'm not super sold on Brooklyn just yet. I mean, yeah, the name value, the on paper, looks fantastic, but it's not, I'm not getting super excited about Brooklyn yet because we don't know if this three-headed monster is going to work for the long haul. In addition to that, too, I think it's going to be a gentleman's sweep, too. I think Brooklyn should get out of here in five. But this Boston team is scrappy. They're playing them really tight. I mean, they're not getting blown out. I mean, they had the tough one a couple nights ago, game two, where they lost by 22. But they've played them tight throughout the majority of all three of those games. Game two got away from them there at the end. But they're barely getting out-rebounded. They're, as far as assists per game, they're pretty much equal. I mean, this, and Jason Tatum is really showing that, yeah, I am a top 10 player in this league and I can carry a team a certain distance. Now, obviously he's not that guy, that LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry type guy that can carry teams a long way by themselves with not a whole lot around them, but he is proving that he can carry a team a certain distance by himself. And so, and not to say that he hasn't had help from the rest of the Celtics roster, but he is, you know, bearing a lot of that load right now. So I like the scrappiness out of Boston, but yeah, Brooklyn should get out of here in five. What, they're in Boston one more night and then they go back to Brooklyn. So
wrap it up at home in game five. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And again, I think you're absolutely right. They are scrappy. I mean, Marcus Smart, I mean, they're a tough defensive team. They've got guys. It's not like they lack talent, but Jaylen Brown was an all-star caliber player this year. I mean, he was really, really good. And when you're missing that type of player, you're just not at your full strength. And unfortunately for Boston, and honestly, unfortunately for Brooklyn, they don't get that test in the first round. So even if they get that gentleman sweep, they're going to go into a tough matchup with a Bucks team that just swept the defending Eastern champs, you know, the defending, you know, the title, you know, goers from the year before. And they're feeling good. And you're going to have to face that team. And that will be a fantastic series.
Barring there's no drastic changes between now and the second round. If we get Nets, Bucks, that feels like a series where Milwaukee's going to come out and take the first two games and punch Brooklyn in the mouth, and they're going to go, "What the hell is that?" It feels like a good opportunity for Milwaukee to play exceptionally well against a really good team, but it also seems like a great opportunity for Brooklyn to get punched in the mouth and for that whole team to be completely unlocked.
Right.
They're like, oh shit, we just got punched in the mouth. Turn it on. Now it's time to turn it on.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a really fun series when we get there.
No doubt, Mitch. I'm right there with you. Let's move to the next Eastern Conference matchup here. Let's talk about the 1-8. That's the Philadelphia 76ers, the 1 seed, and the Washington Wizards. The 8 seed who lost to Boston in the first play-in game, won that second play-in game by a lot over Indiana to earn their spot in the playoffs. And a remarkable run at the end of the season for Bradley Beal, Russell Westbrook, and this Wizards team. But they are thoroughly outmatched in this first round matchup. And as the 1-8 matchup should be, right? Like, that's what you should expect. This is a Philadelphia team, number one seed in the East. Should be the favorites to go to the finals, in my opinion. They're very deep, very talented, and Washington is a good, young, you know, good, scrappy team with stars at the top that are proven, you know, success. And they're just not quite there. They're not quite there. Russell Westbrook is at a bad series. He's only shooting 33%, averaging 13 points a game. Now he's facilitating the ball great, but he's shooting horribly, which, yeah, you know, any fan of a team that had Russell Westbrook at one point in his career is feeling the playoff shooting woes here right now, just as the Wizards fans. They're familiar with that feeling. But Bradley Beal's been fantastic. Mitch, they're going to get swept. I mean, maybe they get one at home. Maybe they get the gentleman sweep. But the Sixers are going to roll through this in preparation for the second round. And that's okay. It's the 1-8. It's the 1-8, you know. It's what should quote-unquote happen.
Yeah, I mean, Washington's scrappy. Great run there at the end of the year to get in at the 8th seed. If Washington were up 2-0 or even 1-1 right now, Bradley Beal would be the MVP of this series. He has played exceptional through these first two games. But, yeah, get out the brooms, man. This is going to be a sweep. And what this says to me is trust the process sounds pretty freaking good right now. If you're this Philadelphia 76ers, and especially if you're a Sixers fan, you were told trust the process. How many years ago was that? 6 years? Let them build, let them groom these young stars. And now finally you're a one seed and looking like the favorite to come out of the East. Trust the process, Dallin. Trust the process.
Yeah. You know, I got to say, I you know, one thing that stuck out in the first two games of this series is how involved Tobias Harris has been on the offensive side and in the scoring volume. He's averaging the most on the Sixers, 28 points a game through the first two games ahead of Joel Embiid. And Embiid's going to get intention. He's going to get his shots, right? He's an MVP candidate in his own right. He's fantastic. He's going to get his points, but he's going to get a lot of attention on offense. And the question will be moving forward, better defensive teams, better schemes, how do the other guys respond? Does Tobias Harris step up and score some points? Ben Simmons, not a great scorer, not a huge scorer. How much can he take over a game on the offensive side of the ball, you know, and get buckets when they need it? So to see a Tobias Harris averaging 28 points a game in the first two games, that's a great sign for Sixers and Sixers fans that the scoring is going to be able to come from other players, even if all the attention goes to Embiid and you sort of force the team to beat you without him. As the strategy may become later on in the playoffs.
Well, that's the thing is, with Tobias Harris playing as well as he is, Embiid's still the threat that he is, he doesn't have to score. He's still averaging a triple-double a game right now.
Ben Simmons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still averaging a triple-double a game, so like he doesn't have to be a big scorer.
Well,
you know?
Right now. But what I'm saying is they shut down Embiid. Tobias Harris can't hit a shot. Can Ben Simmons step up for that game and score 30 points and take it over? You know, because he's not that type of player. Like, he is an all-around guy. He wants to get other players involved. He's going to do all of the things. He's incredible on defense. Like, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about him, but can he take over a game on the offensive side and score when nobody else can? That's still a question to me. And we're going to get a game in the second round or in the third round when they need a win. And it's going to come down to, can Ben Simmons get us buckets? Everybody else, you know, Embiid's shut down. We can't get him the ball. Tobias can't hit a shot. Steph Curry can't hit a shot. Can Simmons be our guy? And I'm curious to see what that looks like.
We know he has the ability to get to the rim. It's the pulling up outside the key and knocking down a shot that I'm concerned about with Ben Simmons.
And when teams force you to do that, you're not coming inside. You're not coming inside. You're going to have to beat us out there. You know, what does that look like? You know, long way to go for the Sixers, but I think they're well on their way, clearly, to getting this first round win. And moving on to the second round, well, they'll face Mitch, the winner of this 4-5 series, a series which has been the best in the Eastern Conference by far. This is one of the best series in the playoffs altogether, but definitely the best in the Eastern Conference. That's the New York Knicks and the Atlanta Hawks, two teams that we haven't seen play at a super high level in a long time. Like, I know the Hawks had those great runs with Budenholzer, you know, what, 2014, 2015. The Knicks, obviously, it's been a long time since they were super competitive. And this series of these two young, scrappy teams looking to prove themselves, one of them is going to get a ticket to the second round, which is so fun because then they're going to get the chance to go against a truly great team in the Sixers, get that, build that learning experience. Great opportunity to watch these two teams. And it has been, you know, a very competitive series. 2-1 right now in favor of Atlanta, who got the win last night at home. I don't think this series is going to be less than 6 or 7 games. It's been great, Mitch. What's your thought on this series so far?
My biggest takeaway from this, and I knew it already, but it just accentuated it for me and just solidified this for me. Trae Young is absolutely sick. That guy is a bad man. What he does to opposing defenses should be criminal. I mean, the way he's able to break down, kick out, pick up, be a true point guard, break down defenses, kick out, pick up the assists, but then his scoring ability, his ability to shoot from deep, his ability to get to the rim, plays tight defense. I mean, this guy is, and he's a spark plug. He's 100 miles an hour all the time. He has by far been the most entertaining player in the entire playoffs this season.
Really? So, I mean, there's a few guys.
We'll talk
about one in the West that has been very intriguing, but yeah. I agree with you. Trae has been awesome, and he's sort of, especially in the games at MSG, Madison Square Garden, where he's, you know, he's taunting the crowd. He's like, I want this. You know, I mean, it's like, that is just fantastic, and I love that he is just embracing the moment of the playoffs, of the competition. Like, that's what makes this so fun.
So I so bad want Trae Young and Spike Lee beef. So bad. So bad.
Yeah, it's great.
That'd be so entertaining. Now, Trae Young doesn't strike me as that kind of guy. Like, he's not a good kid, but he's not Reggie Miller trash talk type guy. But, you know,
they might hate him at this point, like they hated him. I mean, especially if Atlanta gets out of this series, wins game 5 in New York, you know, when they go back there, it could get interesting. But I think, Mitch, this Atlanta team is legit. Not this year, but the next couple years, they should be a top 3 or 4 team in the East. I mean, you look at this roster. It's so young, but so much potential. You mentioned Trae Young. How about Danielle Hunter, right? A guy who they drafted 4th overall a couple years ago, who you watch him in his game, like, he's got so much more to give. He's great on the defensive side of the ball. He's done a great job against Julius Randle in this series. And then on offense, his ability to pick his spot, get his shot, he's only going to get better. And that's a scary proposition for anyone who's looking at the East in the future, you know? You got Trae Young, Hunter, Capella, you know, shooters all around him, and Bogdanovich and Herter. You know, a guy on Onyeka Okongwu, who they drafted last year out of USC, who's a great defensive big. I mean, they just got bodies to throw at you just all up and down the bat. You go 9 deep on that roster, and we're talking about Lou Williams and Danilo Gallinari. It's like, holy cow. This team is very deep. And again, like, I picked them to come out of the first round. I think they're the better team than New York. I picked them to come out of the first round. I don't think they're going to beat Philadelphia, but they're going to be competitive and scrappy. And I'm telling you, the next couple years, they should be making a run to the Eastern Conference Finals. I really believe that. This team is legit.
This team's sick. This team is really sick. Like you said, you're digging 8-9 deep into the bench and you're still pulling out Lou Williams and Danilo Gallinari. I mean,
that's tough. Many teams have that depth, you know? I think Atlanta's great. As far as the Knicks go, this has been a fantastic story first off this year. I'm happy for Knicks fans who get to experience the playoffs in New York again. The NBA is better when the Knicks are good. And I'm glad that they became good in a, like, organic way, right? Like, it wasn't they finally brought in the superstars they were supposedly going to get, you know, all these years. You know, they got a coach who taught a system, was like, we're going to play incredible defense, and Julius Randle is going to have a career year and be an all-star, and we're going to carry ourselves into the playoffs. Now, ultimately, in the playoffs, unless your defense could keep up, And unless your offense can score points, which they haven't been able to do, you're not going to last long. And I think that's the issue with the Knicks as far as the rest of this series go. Julius Randle has really struggled. Derrick Rose has taken a ton of that workload. But when Derrick Rose and Alex Burke are your first, are your two highest scorers in the series, Mitch, that's not a good sign.
No.
That's not a good sign at all. Now, for the Knicks, I mean, it's only 2-1, right? So all things considered, you look at Randle's numbers, you look at all those, you're like, we should be down 0-3, right? It's been a competitive series. You've been in it. It's not like they've gotten blown out. So there's still hope that if Randle turns it on and our defense tightens up a little bit, we could be right back in it. And I think they could, but ultimately I'm going with Atlanta because firepower always wins. Defense is hard to be consistent on, and you've got to be able to score points. Atlanta could do that in droves.
Yeah, I mean, they're still only holding them to, what is that, 101.3 a night? So, right. I mean, they're not playing terrible defense.
No.
But you're absolutely right. The offense has not been there. Julius,
I mean,
Randle's
24% from the field in three games.
Yeah, he's
struggled. You know what I mean? Like, and that was their guy. That was their all-star, their offense. You know, he made everything run this year for him. And don't have that guy on his A game. I mean, they're playing him tough. I mean, Atlanta's playing him tough. I'm not saying Randle's not just like missing shots. I mean, Atlanta's like, someone else got to beat us. It's not going to be this guy. So great strategy. How does the rest of the team around him sort of step up and allow and get him good looks and get him going, you know?
I mean, and that's kind of an indictment of how valuable Julius Randle has been to the Knicks this year. When in the first round of the playoffs, the team is shutting this guy down, and now all of a sudden you're struggling to scrap together enough to beat this five seed Hawks team. It's an indictment of how valuable Julius Randle is to that team. Not a knock on everyone else that's around him, but I mean, you need him to play well in order to beat other teams. So I think the Hawks right now have a winning formula in shutting down Julius Randle and forcing other guys, like you said, Derrick Rose and Alex Burke, to do other things that they typically wouldn't be asked to do, like score. I mean, they're not really asked
that
to
volume,
score.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not asked to score at that volume. So you're 100% correct. 100% correct.
So, I mean, it'll be a great series. Again, 6 or 7 games, I think, here. I'd be shocked if it was like 5. If Atlanta won in 5, I'd be really surprised. Because the Knicks are a good young team, and I think this was a great year for them moving forward, regardless of how this turns out. To make the playoffs as a top 4 seed, to get home court advantage in the first round, and to bring the playoffs back to MSG is a huge win for the Knicks. What it looks like moving forward, time will tell, but I think Atlanta has the formula to win in the playoffs and to advance the next round. I guess we'll see Game 4 on Sunday there, back in Atlanta. All right, Mitch, let's go over to the Western Conference here. And we're going to start with, in the West, like, listen, I said Miami, Milwaukee, the most surprising series. I stand by that. The second most surprising series is this one, hands down. And that is the Los Angeles Clippers, the 4 seed. Dallas Mavericks, the 5 seed. Dallas leads this series 2-1. Won both games at Staples in LA, Game 1, Game 2. Last night, the Clippers righted the ship. Didn't go down 3-0 in that game. In that Game 3 in Dallas, they were able to get the win. It's a 2-1 series. Game 4 tomorrow night on Sunday. Chance for the Clippers to tie it back up and retake home court. A chance for the Mavericks to go up 3-1 and put elimination game on the line for the Clippers back in LA. This has been a crazy series, Mitch. And the one thing I want to start on the Dallas side. This is all about Luka. Holy cow. You talked about Trae Young's been the guy in the playoffs. It's Luka, Mitch. Are you kidding me? 38 points a game, 8.7 rebounds, 9 assists. He's shooting over 51% from the field, 45% from three. I mean, he's just been out of this world. And Mitch, Luka Doncic is a top 3 player in the NBA.
Okay, we have the same takeaway then. So let's talk
like,
about it. Let's
what else is there to say? We saw him do this in the bubble last year, right? And it like they got to six games. They were competitive when they shouldn't have been. And it was like, this kid's special, right? And then he comes out, has a fantastic year this year, was a borderline MVP candidate. You know, they get to the five seed. They have the Clippers. The Clippers tank away from the 2-3 to avoid the Lakers and to get the Clippers in the first round, to get the Jazz. You know, they try to take the quote-unquote easier path. And then what does he do? He balls out and says, yeah, right, I'll take that disrespect and I'll take two wins in Staples, please. I mean, he's been great. Who would you take in the NBA right now over Luka Doncic besides, like, Giannis for the physical just specimen that he is? I mean, no Steph one. Curry maybe playing at the level that he was, and then it's like Luka. He's a top three player in the NBA. He's the future of the league, and it's incredible to watch what he's done against the Clippers.
He is a top three player in the league. And if he's not top three, he's at least top five. At least top five. You mentioned the 3-point percentage. I just want to point out Tim Hardaway's 3-point percentage through this, 65% from 3 points. And he's, it's not
15,
like,
it's, he's 15 for 23. That is crazy.
That's
three games.
Insane. That's nuts. Insane. I was just like, look, I was like, ah, man, shit, Luka's really shot the lights out. That went, oh my God, Tim Hardaway has been the best shooter in this series. It hasn't even been Luka. But when Luka what other things that Luka brings to the table makes him the best player in this series. This Dallas team, I'll tell you what, they should be winning this series. They should be winning the series. In fact, I expect them to win this series. The Clippers right now, Paul George is not shooting the ball well from deep. 23%. From 3-point range right now. He's not even shooting the ball necessarily well, even when he gets inside the 3-point line from inside the paint. He's not playing good defense. So this team is just not putting it all together. The Marcus Morris made the dumb mental mistake last night firing the gun at the sideline and giving up free points. That's free points because you can't keep your mouth shut. And I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant now. This is why the NBA is borderline unwatchable a lot of times. It's because of dumbasses like Marcus Morris that have to do that dumb shit. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense why anyone would ever have to do that. And guess what? You wind up costing your team. You cost your team. Now, you're lucky. You're lucky you got the dub. Because it was really close to that being a much closer game, and you could have cost your team a game because you were a dumbass. I just don't like Marcus Morris, Dallin. I don't like Marcus Morris.
Do you like either of the Morris twins?
I don't like Markieff either, but I think they're both.
If you had to rank them in terms of your favorite, Markieff and then Marcus, that's how I've always felt.
Yeah, Marcus sucks. Markieff
seems like the more chill. Like, he's a Morris twin, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but like, Marcus is like, I don't think you're a nice person.
I think he's a dick. I think he's
yeah,
an asshole.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
That can't keep his mouth shut. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean,
you know.
And honestly, what it came down to down the stretch, and to Marcus Morris's credit and the Clippers' credit, is last night they took advantage of Marcus Morris's ability to hit that corner three. And it happened about three or four times there at the end of the game where he was wide open. On a kick out, they drove the lane, broke it down, and kicked it out to him, and he's wide open, and I think he hit two or three of those. So, you know, that became one of the defining moments there at the end of the game. But I fully expect the Mavericks to win this series. I'm not a big Clippers guy right now.
I mean, how could you, like, you know, how could you put your name behind the Clippers right now? I mean, I know they won that last game, but it has been disappointing performances. Not only, like, in this playoff series, but, like, let's talk about last year, too, and the formation of this team. I mean, I've been saying since the beginning that the Clippers were frauds. The minute they declared themselves the new team in L.A., before they had ever even touched the court together, before they'd even proven anything, and then to go out last year, disappointment in the second round of the Nuggets, tank your way into the 4-5 matchup this year and lose first your first two home games against Luka and the Mavericks, who you tanked to match up with. The Clippers are frauds. And until they've proven me otherwise, I will never believe that they're able to pull it off. Like, even if they win this series, Mitch, which it's only 2-1, they can absolutely win this series, right? Not out of it. You got work to do, but not out of it. They have Kawhi Leonard, right? He's pretty dang good last time I checked. Ultimately, though, this is the poor man's Lakers, Mitch. They're a team that's based around two superstars, and the idea is that the two superstars are good enough, and the role players around them know what they can do and what they should do to make a unit that flows perfectly. That's what we saw from the Lakers championship team last year, right? AD, LeBron, and role players who knew what they were supposed to do, executed their jobs, and that was a great unit. That was an unbeatable unit. The Clippers are trying to do that. They've never been that. Their roster, their role players are not what the Lakers have been able to do, not in a lot of ways based on talent, but just based on the way the team has used them. Some of these guys are playing minutes, not playing minutes, right? Luke Kennard, they paid $64 million and they won't even play him. It's like, if he's supposed to be your spot up bench three guy, why is he not playing? Why do you have Reggie Jackson in the game?
Serge Ibaka is playing 9 minutes of game right now.
Like, why are you letting Pat Beverly get cooked by Luka Doncic so that he can call him short on his way back down the court? Like, why are we doing this? It's amazing to me, Mitch. And that's why, even if the Clippers get out of this first round against the Mavericks, which, again, they still can, they don't have hope moving forward. This is not a championship team. This is not a team that's going to beat the Utah Jazz in the next round. I'll tell you that.
Well, they're not beating the Jazz.
This is a team with inherent flaws, and that's why I never believed in the Clippers before. They've only proven that to be true. They're too reliant on their star players because the bench either isn't good or doesn't know what they're supposed to do. There's not the consistency there that you've seen with the other team in LA. And ultimately, playoff P, Paul George, is a fraud. He's always been in the playoffs, and he will continue to be. I don't know. Like, that's it. That's it, Mitch. I hate the Clippers. But, I mean, still, like, come on.
I mean, well, like you said, if they somehow, like you said, and we'll continue to say it, they could get out the first round. They could. But if they do, they sure as hell aren't beating the Utah Jazz. And if for some weird reason Memphis winds up there, Memphis is gonna play, has been playing so tough recently that I don't trust the Clippers against the Grizzlies.
If it was Grizzlies Clippers, Mitch, I'm taking Grizzlies. Like, I'm not picking the Los Angeles Frauders, okay? Like, I'm not doing it.
No, but because Memphis would have had to have played Utah tough. They're playing Utah tough right now.
Right.
I mean, they're playing them tough right now, to be honest.
Right.
And the Clippers, they're soft. They're just soft.
Yeah.
I mean, they have no backbone. They're spineless.
Right. And they haven't proven anything. Like, they've never showed us in this modern iteration of the Clippers. In fact, in their history, they've never showed us. But specifically, you know, in these 2 years of the Kawhi, PG, bring these guys in, win a championship, Clippers, they have never proven to us that they are legit. They haven't. They didn't do it last year. They had the opportunity. They could have faced the Lakers in that Western Conference Finals. They failed, and they're not proving it this year. I'll tell you that. So why are, like, I don't get the people that are like, it's the Clippers, it's Kawhi and Paul George. They're gonna, like, no, they're not going to do it. They're not going to make the run. Why would we give them the benefit of the doubt here? I don't understand that.
Quit watching ESPN, kids. The Clippers aren't as good as they make them out to
exactly.
be.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I watch ESPN. It's a bad habit. Don't pick it up. It's like smoking. Don't start watching ESPN.
Oh, man. All right. I could shit on the Clippers for days, but we should move on.
Let's move on.
Let's talk about the next matchup here. The other side of this bracket, if you will. And that is the 3-6. Let's talk about Denver and Portland. Denver up 2-1 in this series over the Portland Trail Blazers. Game 4 today. Chance for Denver to go up 3-1. Chance for Portland, who stole a game on the road in Denver. Chance to tie the series back up at 2-2 before they head back to Denver. They got one more game here in Portland. Mitch, this series has been one of the least interesting to me, if I'm being honest. There's multiple reasons One, the Nuggets, as great as they are not as good as they could be because Jamal Murray is not playing and he won't be playing anytime soon. And unfortunately, that really limits the ceiling of what the Nuggets can be. With Murray, that's a finals contender. Without him, I don't know if they get out of the second round. I think they're fine against Portland because what I've learned about Portland, Mitch, is what we've learned every year of this modern iteration of the Portland Trailblazers, the Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, which is they cannot play defense and it will forever ruin their chances of going to the NBA Finals. They can't play a lick of defense, and they never have, and that's why they've never really made significant runs, right? They made the one Western Conference Finals run, right, even a couple of years ago, I think.
Was that the one where they played the Warriors?
Right, that was the Warriors-Raptors year, I think.
Yeah.
When that was, you know, so they had, like, the one time they made it to the Western Conference Finals, but this team cannot, like, they can't play defense, and they've never solved that answer. And unfortunately, it's the inherent flaw, as we've talked about before on this podcast, of having CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard as your two guards. There's nobody defensively who could shut down a guard. And the rest of the team, for that matter, isn't defensive stalwarts on their own right. So when you don't play any defense, like you're not gonna advance. You gotta score the ball, but you've gotta be able to get stops when it matters. And this team cannot do that. They don't have a player on their roster that could do that. And if their hope is to outscore everybody 140, you know, a game and wake their way through the playoffs, they're not going to do it. So Denver's in control. I always felt like they were. This has just been a further confirmation of the inherent flaw in the way that the Blazers team has been constructed, right? There's an inherent ceiling with this team. And we've seen that year after year. And basically this year's no different.
Here's what I take away from this. If the Portland Trailblazers could play defense, Dame Lillard would be as valuable as LeBron James is in the playoffs because of his ability to score and what he brings to the table offensively. If they could just play defense, you know who the leading scorer over the last three games was?
Damian Lillard?
It was Damian Lillard.
Not surprising.
34, 42, 37. He's averaging 37.7 points a game. Yet they are giving up over 120 a game. I mean, if they had any sort of defense on the Portland Trail Blazers, Damian Lillard would be as valuable as LeBron James is in the playoffs. He would be that guy that is your go-to guy that can lock it, that can seal games for you, and he still does that. But he doesn't get the recognition because he's not on a winning team, and this team right now is a playoff team, but they're not winners. And it's frustrating for me as a big Dame guy to see him year in, year out, play his ass off, lead in a lot of, you know, bunch of statistical categories or be near the top in a lot of statistical categories, yet not get out of the first round or not get out of the second round because he has a cast of clowns around him. And it sucks. Dame Lillard is a load bearer. He can put a team on his back. He's done it year in, year out. Now, not to say without a little help from CJ McCollum and Jusuf Nurkić at times, but he has been bearing the load of the Portland Trail Blazers for the last 6 years and has nothing to show for it because they won't build around him. And it's sad. And it sucks.
They won't build the right way around him. Like, you know, they've kept an all-star and an all-star caliber player in McCollum next to him, right? Nurkić is a good player when he's healthy. They've made marginal moves around the way, but ultimately, again, this comes down to the inherent flaw of, like, you pair Lillard and McCollum as a backcourt, you're just never going to win a championship. Like, I'm sorry, like, unless everybody else on that team is a defensive mastermind, right? Like, that's how the team should be designed if that's what you're going to do. Instead, they trade away a defensive player in Gary Trent for a Norman Powell who just scores points off the bench. It's like, you've got scoring. Like, how about you get a guy who can get a stop, you know?
I got an idea for this now. We'll do this another day. We need to fix the Portland Trail Blazers.
Oh, good luck.
No, what would we do? I mean,
okay, I love this. Yeah, one of these days we'll have to explore this because it's not for lack of talent. It's a talented team. It's built the wrong way. Damian Lillard's good enough to carry a team to the finals. Not this team, though.
No.
Not with CJ McCollum as his running mate. He cannot.
Which is exactly why I said he would be just as valuable as LeBron is in the playoffs. Because he can carry a team, but he can't carry this one.
He is Steph Curry-esque in his ability to score points.
Absolutely.
And to
Absolutely.
Just and to just flame you into a keep you in a game or keep you ahead in a game if he had the team around him to support him. So, you know, listen, it's unfortunate for Dame. It's unfortunate for Portland. I hope they really finally look at the roster and say, we need to make big changes because it's the same thing every year. And, you know, maybe, you know, unfortunately for a small market team like Portland, the motivations aren't necessarily the same as an LA Lakers or New York Knicks. Like, you need to stay relevant and you need to stay consistent. You need to sell tickets. And making the playoffs year after year with Lillard and McCollum, it does that. So, like, I get if a team feels comfortable, you know, not making too many moves and not shaking things up too much. But if they ever want to make a finals, if they ever want to fully see what Damian Lillard could do in the heights that he can bring them to, they have to make drastic changes to their roster.
Big time.
So
I think it starts with moving on from McCollum, but
100%. And it involves a lot of other things after that too. Probably a new coach. Terry Stotts probably just get his ass out of there. Yeah. He's been fine, but he's a little change of pace. All right, Mitch, Denver, great series. Jokic has been MVP level as he was all season. He should deservedly win the MVP this year, and he's going to carry his team in the second round. You know, depending on who they match up there, it's going to be a tough task in the second round for them. But I think they're on their way. Even if, you know, this could be a 6-game, maybe even 7-game series. But I feel confident in Denver still. That hasn't changed for me.
Yeah, 6 feels right. Nikola Jokic has played that outstanding. I mean, out of his mind. He has really done a good job of stepping up and filling that role. And so has Michael Porter Jr. He's stepped up and filled that void that Jamal Murray left really well. So Austin Rivers has played great. So has Aaron Gordon. So this team could still make a little bit of a push, but not quite the run that we thought they were going to make because Jamal Murray is absent now. So
exactly. Yep. No doubt. All right, Mitch, let's move to the 1-8 matchup. We have the Utah Jazz and the Memphis Grizzlies. This series is tied at 1. They play game 3 in Memphis tonight. Big game, obviously, for a chance for somebody to go up 2-1. That first game, you know, it's been a tight series, right? First game, no Donovan Mitchell. Memphis smacks him in the mouth, gets the win game 1. Utah comes back, scores 141 points. Mitchell back in the lineup, limited still, but back in the lineup. And they put it on him. And they ran the races. And they're like, no, we can shoot the ball, don't worry. I was honestly never worried about the Jazz in this series. Even after the game 1, no Mitchell. Like I saw Jazz fans here in Utah. They were like, oh no. Oh no. What's going on? I don't know what's going on. I'm like, guys, this was the best team in the NBA all season. Like, they're not going to, like Memphis might give them a challenge, but I'm not worried about us getting out of this round. Like, we will be fine. Spider Mitchell comes back and, like, look, things were significantly better for the team.
I will sympathize with the Utah Jazz fans, though, on their, oh, my God, oh, no, it's happening. Because think about how many times in the Stockton Malone era they were the best team in the West and then didn't get to the finals.
Right.
Because something, they had this massive collapse in the playoffs. Or even over the last couple years where they were, like, the 2-3 seed and something that goes wrong, something goes awry, and they don't get out of the second round. So I sympathize with him on that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, after, you know, I understand, but I was never worried. I always felt like the Jazz were going to pull this out. In my mind, this was always a gentleman's sweep sort of series, and maybe it goes 6 games. Maybe Memphis steals one of the, you know, gets one of these at home in game 3 or 4. We go back to Utah game 5, 2-2, and then the Jazz close it out from there. But I this Jazz team, Mitch, is so good. We talk about units, teams that know what to do, role players that know what to do, get their spots, get their shots, play their defense. That's what the Jazz have done all year. And it's not going to change in the playoffs. So Memphis is a great story. What a fun team. Ja Morant, Mitch. That Ja Morant kid is incredible. I mean, I've always loved Ja, right? We have always loved Ja. He is incredible. And that's what's fun about the playoffs is you get in moments where you get to see this kid just go off 47 points in game two. And you're like, he's legit. He's a future star. And it's not going to happen for Memphis this year, but they are well on their way to becoming a formidable foe in the West and a consistent playoff contender. And it's due to the superstar that they have there at the point guard position.
Yeah, Ja's fantastic. He's unreal. Unfortunately, he's on the wrong side of one of the biggest highlight clips of the playoffs when Rudy Gobert absolutely stuffed him.
Yo, you know, Rudy always gets on the other end of those highlights, right? It's always Steph Curry putting him in a blender or somebody. You know, good for Rudy to get one, you know? Give me viral moment of him just stuffing.
The stifle tower. I mean, just stuck up one of his arms. And,
you love down. To see it. You
it was great. And it. I love Ja, but I was like, man, what a redemption story for Rudy Gobert. You started COVID, and now you... and now
yes,
you're doing
the actual
this.
Source of COVID. That is true. Yes.
No,
it's great. It's been a fun series, and it should be very competitive throughout. Like I don't think Memphis is going to get blown out by any means. I think the Jazz are a much better team, and they'll prove that. But Memphis is scrappy and good for them. This is the type of licks and the type of scars that you have to take as a young team to earn your spot as a top team. Listen, the Jazz have gone to the playoffs for four straight years. They've made it out of the first round a couple times. They didn't make it out a couple times. They've been gentlemen sweeped before. They beat teams that they shouldn't have beat, right? They've been through everything. They had a 3-1 series lead against Denver last year and blew it. This Jazz team knows what it takes because they've actually been through it all, right? They've seen the ups and downs of the playoffs. They've taken their scars, and now they're here, and they've proven themselves to be a top team. Memphis is a couple years away from that, but this sort of series is so valuable for these young teams, and that's why I'm excited for the Knicks and the Hawks. I'm excited for the Grizzlies. I'm excited for these young teams that, you know, it's not going to be their year, but they're getting great value that's going to build winners in the future.
Absolutely. Memphis is scrappy. I think six is as deep as we'll see this series go. I think we would be doing them a disservice if we didn't mention their names. Dylan Brooks, Jonas Valanciunas, playing exceptionally well as well.
It's not just Ja Morant. Yeah, no, Jaren Jackson Jr., who missed some time this year, you know, sort of brought him back right before the end of the regular season. And I mean, he was a number two pick, right? Or number three pick a couple years ago, you know, highly touted out of Michigan State. They've got dudes. They've got dudes on that roster and young players that are going to grow together. And, of course, the superstar at the top there, Ja Morant. Incredible. Yeah.
Absolutely. Incredible.
Fun team. I know. And like watching them play against the Jazz, like I got to kind of root against them. Like I don't want the Grizzlies to win, but I'm also like rooting for Ja to hit 50 the other night. You know, I'm like, Listen, Jazz are going to win, but like, let's see it, young kid. Like, let's go, you know? So anyway, it's just one of the best parts about the playoffs, you know?
Absolutely.
Okay. Final series here, Mitch. Number 2 seed, Phoenix Suns. Number 7 seed, Los Angeles Lakers. Lakers right now, 2-1 lead in the series. They dropped game one, in Phoenix, but dropped because let's be honest, the Lakers were the favorite. I mean, they were literally the betting favorite in this series, despite being the 7th seed. LeBron James, AD, the reason why they ended up in the 7th seed, lots of injuries towards, you know, down the stretch. They fell off, but they're the better team. And I think even more so now with Chris Paul's injury in game one, which that shoulder tweak, he's only playing like 25 minutes a game right now. And even when he's in there, like he's Chris Paul, but he's not the same guy. And you take out that all-star guard for them, that veteran presence, the only guy on that team really who's actually been there and done it and has the experience, has the licks. We're talking about Memphis. I mean, despite the fact that Phoenix is a 2-seed, none of those guys have even made the playoffs before. This is Booker, Ayton, Mikal Bridges, all those guys. This is their first experience in the playoffs. And man, what a way to experience it with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the defending champion Lakers in the first round. Like, it's not fair, but it is what it is. You know, I don't think they stand a chance in this series. I said before the series started, before game one, Mitch, I tweeted out, Lakers in five. And I felt confident about that after game one, despite the loss. And I felt confident about that ever since. And I am still saying Lakers in five here. They're the better team. Phoenix was always too early for me. Regular season darling. They weren't going to be able to get it done in the postseason. And, you know, again, without Chris Paul being fully healthy, with the Lakers playing the way they are defensively right now, I mean, that is tough, Mitch. 99, 102, 95. That's the points that Phoenix has scored in each game. And that is a team that needs to put up points. That Lakers defense is legit.
Don't worry. Don't worry about them putting up points. They got Frank Kaminsky.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. Excuse me.
They got Frank Kaminsky. They got Dario Saric.
They got
good.
Points.
They're good.
They got points.
No, as much as I have been a Laker hater over the last week or so because of the antics of LeBron James and the ridiculousness of the ejection of Devin Booker on that push. And I put
okay.
a hand touch
well,
with Devin, with
I don't,
Dennis Schroeder.
He full hand to push somebody in the air. I mean, like, I'm not saying it's egregious, but like,
that's
what else
not
are the
worthy
refs
of ejection.
To do?
That's not worthy of ejection. And
if
no,
I, if someone
was
in the air,
no, it was not
him.
Even no, it was not even full extension.
It was two hand push.
It was not even full extension.
You two hand push someone going up for a layup, Mitch. What else are you supposed to do? Like, you should not do that. You should not do that. That like. That you should be smart enough to not two-hand push somebody in the air as they're going for a layup.
I know I'm in the majority when I say this. That was weak ejection.
That's not weak ejection. It's not weak because he was already fouled out of the game, right? So, like, he was fouled out either way. That was his sixth foul. He's out of the game. Like, the ejection part, whatever. That was extra. I mean, he's not playing in the game either way. He's fouled out. It's a foul. The question of the flagrant, whatever, but... Like, you know, guy's going up
it's
for
not
like,
a, it's not a flagrant.
Guy's in the air. He's defenseless. He can't two-hand push him. That's just, you know, if like the Lakers did that and they called a flagrant on LeBron for doing that, it's a foul. You can't,
I mean,
like,
essentially,
can't do that.
Essentially what we're saying, though, is what he did is equivalent to someone getting clothesline going up to the rim.
I mean, there's a lot of definitions
that's
of the flagrant run. I saw many flagrant ones in this Heat-Bucks game where a guy's going to block a shot at the rim and hits the guy in the face and they call a flagrant one. Like... I don't think that's a flagrant one, but by the book it is. And if that's what they're calling, that's what they're calling. You know,
like, go watch some of those early 90s Pacers Pistons series.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and
just,
tell me
it's
what
a
flagrant is
it's
again.
A very different
league. Those are flagrants.
It's a very
those
different
were flagrants.
League.
They can go out there and beat the hell out of someone or smack someone in the ass. That was good physical basketball. This was ridiculous. But
it's
anyway.
A very different league. Rules are different now. It's. I mean, I listen, like, I'd love for it to be, I think
the,
they call
the,
too many
the rules
fouls. I wish it could be
league.
More physical, but that is a foul.
It's because players got softer. Flagrant. Players are softer now. That's just the way it is.
I don't think it's the players.
Players are softer.
You think it's the, I mean, players are physically more imposing than they ever have been. They're stronger, faster, bigger, like, than they ever have been. It's not a fact that the players can't handle it.
You
it's
think there's someone
the
more physically imposing right now than Shaq?
Well, Shaq...
Ever was?
Okay. I mean, I'm talking... You saying if there's ever been a player as... By average, on average, yes. I mean, look at some of the guys that were playing in the 80s and 90s. Mitch, they look like you and me. Like, come on.
No, they don't. No, they
like,
don't.
Like, this is a very different game. Every single one of these guys is an incredible athlete in the NBA nowadays. It's not the player. It is the amount of money that these players make. It's the amount of money that's in the NBA now that it's all about protecting the investment. That's why the rules are what they are. I'm not saying I agree, but it's not because players are weak. It's because the NBA is weak. The NBA doesn't want these guys getting injured. The NBA wants to protect its investment.
Look, I have a serious love-hate relationship with the NBA. It's a cupcake league. I hate to break it to you. It's a cupcake league.
But what What does that mean? What does Cupcake League mean, though?
It's not even physical anymore, man. You can't.
I mean, that's that.
You
I
can
mean,
look that, at like, someone the wrong way and get a foul called on.
I mean, come on. You can watch a basketball game. I mean, refs are different. Refs are different every week. I agree the rules could be less. I'm not agreeing with the rules per se. But like, it's not like you can't touch people anymore. Like, that's, you know, come on. But
I don't know. No.
Neither of us agree with the rules. I'm just saying, it is what it is, right?
So, and I'm also putting LeBron in the pit of misery.
For
the act job that he's put on the last few weeks. I mean, it's been absolutely egregious. Absolutely egregious. Dilly dilly. LeBron, you are in the pit of misery. And look, I'll tell you.
Do they have Taco Tuesdays in the pit of misery?
No, he's going to have to miss out on that.
Oh, man.
The poking in the eye thing. I know we got to talk about the series, but I just want to get this off my chest because I've been waiting.
Shooting at the middle hoop. What do you mean?
Have you ever been poked in the eye before? You don't see three rims. You see nothing. Okay? That tells me concussion. And guess what? I've had those before. Guy didn't seem concussed. Guy seemed pretty okay. And then he wants to fake the arm injury when he got hooked. And I mean, it was blatant that nothing happened. He lays there. A skirmish happens on the sideline, away from him. He realizes, oh crap, the attention's not on me. He gets up, walks over to where the disagreement was, then kneels down and grabs his arm so that now the attention is put on him. The ultimate prima donna crybaby, LeBron James. I'll tell you what, with his acting skills, Space Jam 2 better be good.
I've a lot invested in that movie, so yeah, it better be good. My whole childhood rests on how good that movie is.
This guy stinks. He stinks.
LeBron's always like I think this stuff is so funny because it's not like LeBron has just suddenly decided to do this. Like I've heard every single year for the last like decade, and I just think it's funny that we still get like mad about LeBron flopping around the court and doing an acting job.
People
which
got
he's
mad
done
at
for
Rick
forever.
But people got mad at Rick Fox for doing it forever. Why do we not want to cut LeBron some slack for it?
I'm not saying cut him some slack. I'm just wondering why we're getting mad about the same thing for the last 10 years. Like, it's what he's going to do.
Mad at Rick Fox for his
like
entire
being
career
mad
for
at,
flopping. That's why.
I mean, Rick Fox is a little different than LeBron James, but,
he's a
you
flopper.
Know, I'm just saying, like, it just seems funny to me. He's always been that way, you know? But, hey, yeah, hopefully Space Jam 2, you know, hopefully those acting lessons have paid off. Okay, Mitch, so let's talk about this series then. 2-1, Lakers, second game at home here on Sunday. Chance to go up 3-1. I said, again, earlier, gentlemen sweep. I said it before the series, and I'm sticking by it, especially now with the Chris Paul stuff. And him not being at full health. What are your thoughts on this, and how do you see this playing out?
I still think you get to six. I think Devin Booker's going to have one of those nights where he's going to go absolutely nuclear. And I think that they can play good enough defense to hold the Lakers to, you know, about that 110 area, which they have the entire series. You know, they've held them between 99 and 109.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers' offense isn't great.
No,
right?
But I think they're
not scoring a lot of points. They want that game in the high 90s, low 100s, you know.
I think we could see a night, though, where Devin Booker and Mikal Bridges go nuclear and have a big night, and they could get to six. So I'll say six because I think one of those nights is bound to happen, but that might be when they're down 3-1.
Right. I was going to say, they will have game five back in Phoenix. Maybe that's when, in front of the home crowd, they have that big game from Booker, perhaps. And I do want to say, too, DeAndre Ayton has had a really big series, first playoff series. And I want to give him a lot of credit, but I do want to add this caveat because I've seen a lot of praise for Ayton. And I'm not trying to take away from what he's done, but it's clear that the Lakers are allowing Ayton to be the guy to score the points and not Devin Booker be the focal point of the offense. And that's why Ayton is getting a lot more looks and better looks than he maybe did during the regular season. Because ultimately you'd rather have DeAndre Ayton beating you than Devin Booker. Right. And so in this scenario, Ayton's getting a lot of looks. He's playing really well and he's taking advantage and good on him for it. But I watching these games, that's a strategy. That's a defensive strategy of we're going to limit Booker. They're double teaming him high off the 3-point line, making him get the ball out of his hands. That, you know, KCP, Caruso, whoever's guarding him's draped on him, making sure he doesn't get in the paint, making sure he doesn't get open looks at three, and they're letting other guys, you know, get shots. And an Ayton is a great example of that. So it'll be curious to see if Booker, you know, with that defensive attention and the defensive pressure that the Lakers have put on him, if he could still get off a 40-point game, as you mentioned. He's definitely capable. Like, I mean, he's an incredible scorer. He's one of the best in the NBA. He's capable of hitting that mark. But the Lakers are making his life hell. And they're going to say someone else has got to beat him. And especially now with Chris Paul dinged up, even more so are you going to put your attention on Devin Booker.
Yeah, I mean, really, the key thing in this whole series is the fact that Chris Paul's gone. Because when Chris Paul's running the offense, then you allow Devin Booker to be the scorer. You allow him to go be aggressive, and you don't have to have him run an offense. And so, yeah, I mean,
And somebody else needs attention now. A ball handler needs attention in Chris Paul. You can't just let him. He's going to orchestrate you. He's going to hit that little mid-range you to death.
He can still shoot the ball pretty well. Yeah. So
And he's still playing, right, but clearly limited. 20-25 minutes a game. And he's not even in there in the closing stretches, right? Like, I mean, they're not using him that way because they can't. He physically can't be there. It is a shame. It is a shame to see. But it's also like this is how it was in Houston a couple years ago, right? They had chances at big runs. Chris Paul couldn't stay healthy, you know? And unfortunately, maybe that's the problem with team building and having Chris Paul in mind at this point in his career is maybe you can't rely on him in the playoffs fully because of the injury history and the age. I mean, I don't know. A lot of this is luck and circumstance, but there's a couple series in a row now for him where, you know, his health has been what's limited a very good team from advancing, past, you know, first, second round. So
I think Chris Paul is just going to wind up being the, correct me if I'm wrong, the Clyde Drexler of our era. He doesn't get that championship until way later in his career. He's like in his mid 30s. I think Clyde Drexler didn't get one until he was with the Rockets in the early mid 90s, where just a fantastic player and one of the all time greats doesn't actually get that opportunity to actually get that done until later in his career. Chris Paul is Clyde Drexler. That's what I'm saying.
I like it. Or he becomes John Stockton, which is the guy who never got it. You know, made some great runs. You know, but Chris Paul's never made a finals, though. You know, and that's a big difference there, right? Like,
Stockton made finals.
To this point, he still hasn't even made the NBA finals, let alone, you know, like, been able to have a chance to win one. So that, I mean, remains to be seen. This Phoenix team, though, even with the loss in this series, this is great. Same thing with Memphis, right? Great experience. Like, I know you were the 2 seed, but you came across the defending champs in what's not a normal 2-7 matchup. And you probably should have lost the series, and they probably will. You know, if they don't, great on them. Like, but I'm taking the Lakers, and this is going to be great experience for them in the future. It's going to put a fire under Booker and Ayton and Bridges and all those young guys who are like, man, we got the taste, but it wasn't enough. I need more. I'm going to go even harder next year. I'm training all offseason. I'm ready to go. I want to get back there, and I want to get past the first round this time. Like, I want to win some, you know, that is so valuable. So regardless of how this series plays out, that experience for the Suns is valuable, and it's going to bode well for them moving forward because this is a team that's going to be sticking around here in the foreseeable future. You know, Chris Paul can stay healthy. The way that this team has grown, they're going to be a consistent playoff team for the next couple of years, and they might have some shots at some finals runs depending on how the roster, you know, shapes up around their star.
Yeah, 100%. So.
All right, Mitch. That's it. We've gone through every team and every matchup in this playoffs. This has been a ton of fun, and I'm glad we got to do this. The NBA playoffs are so much fun, and we've had so many great series in the first round to look forward to, and obviously it'll only get better as we move further. But anything else before we wrap this up?
Nope.
Okay. Simple and sweet. Oh, listen, you don't have to have anything.
No, I'll add a little something. I'm just excited to see. I'm excited to see how the rest of these first round matchups go. I mean, we got some really great matchup still to go. We talked about Atlanta, New York. We've talked about Memphis, Utah, how that one might be a little bit of a scrappy series. We got some good ones coming up, and I'm excited to see if we get any upsets here. If we get any upsets, because we got some lower seeds leading the series right now. It's a very unique season, so excited for the rest of these NBA playoffs.
No doubt, Mitch. As always, guys, we appreciate you sticking around, listening to the podcast this week. If you haven't already, check us out on Anchor. You can listen to the podcast there. You can become a supporter like Sammy and David, beautiful people who are monthly supporters of this podcast. You can join them on that. You can also leave us voice messages like our good friend Tanner Presenti did this week. So leave those messages there. Follow us on Anchor, and that's probably the best place to find all of our podcast content. So anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys. That's the website. Mitch, tell us where they can find us on social media.
You can find us at Instagram at the Sports Hour Guys. You can find us on Twitter at Sports Hour Guys. Website's going to drop soon. We'll be having some other content up there. You can go ahead and give us a listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. Go on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Tell us we suck, because that's the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better, my friend. It's been a pleasure. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for listening. Jordan, request your $100 from Mitch in cryptocurrency. And we will catch you next week.
See ya!